Looks fine to me. Nina or Maurice, does everything look okay to you on the minutes?
If it would be possible to give me like 3 minutes, and if you don't hear from me, then I am okay. But if something, then I will just post a message in the chat.
Okay, Scott, are you okay with the minutes?
Now, when we say a change was made, it's not very specific. So is that okay, just like that, or?
Hold on a second.
Minutes from April 30, 2020 were reviewed and a change was made.
Mm-hmm.
Is that acceptable if, I mean?
The change was a name, right?
That's what we've always done when there's a change. We just make a note that was changed, but then it's changed in the minutes before they're posted. So it's just a note that they were changed before they were posted.
Okay.
All right, so I think we're good then.
Okay, and sorry, let me get back here. I should have opened up by saying this is the BOT and UFF bargaining June, what is it today, 11th, and we have distributed the minutes and they have been approved. So we are ready to roll, I guess. Okay, so Article 23 salary, and you said Rich Goss wants to provide us with some rationale for the new merit system?
Mm-hmm. Yes, to add a new merit system. So Rich Goss, he has a PowerPoint. I think I did share the PowerPoint and the Excel sheet with you all, but he'd like, I think he, Rich, you want to be able to share your PowerPoint now, right?
Yes, I've got ability to share my screen, so I'm ready to do so.
Okay, Briannis, could you please give him the
I've got it.
Oh, you got it. Good.
Yeah.
Okay, whenever you're ready, Rich.
Okay. And is that showing the beginning of the proposal?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So since you had access to the slides ahead of time, I'll try to run through this quickly so that we can get to questions. So here's the full language of the full text of the proposed language, and let's look at the sections. So this first section, so both sides have an obligation to provide equitable opportunity. And since at least 1995, millions of salary dollars have been distributed without including equitable opportunity for specific groups of employees. In some years, Tipperary and Sotal have been the only salary increase dollars, so you've left people out completely in those years. And even when there have been other salary dollars, the Tipperary and Sotal have been a large chunk of the total. So we're long overdue to fix this inequity. And Sherry, you may remember back, we acknowledged this problem when we started local bargaining 15 years ago, but we weren't able to solve it then, and nothing has changed in the intervening years. So what we're proposing is setting up an equivalent pool of funds. If Tipperary and Sotal happened in a given year, then this pool would also happen. We're pairing these together. Eligibility is based on receiving a performance evaluation of above satisfactory or outstanding. There's not anything new in this distribution language. It's how we've done it previously. And the pool of funds for a specific unit is determined by the number of employees. The cost of that pool doesn't change based on the evaluations or salaries of those employees. But the distribution is based on the evaluations and is calculated as a percentage of their salaries. The ratio of 1 to 1.7 begins by calculating 1% and 1.7% increases. We first determine the size of the pool of the funds by the number of employees, then we calculate how much would be needed for 1% and 1.7% increases. We divide the pool by the aggregate interim cost to determine the actual percentage raises. In this example, the pool that we had for 42 employees would be 21,000. If we did that calculation of 1 and 1.7, we'd have 39,000 that we would need. So that would yield for an above satisfactory evaluation. They wouldn't receive a 1% increase. They'd receive a 0.538% increase. And then you would multiply that by 1.7. So an outstanding would get a 0.915% for an outstanding evaluation. This first example keeps the math easy. We have a unit with 10 employees, each making 50,000, and each one of them above satisfactory. So 10 employees times 500 bucks yields a pool of $5,000, which also happens to be match exactly the 1% of aggregate salaries of 500,000. So we needed $5,000, we had $5,000, everybody gets a 1% increase. The above satisfactory is a one. The next example has the same group of employees, except this time everyone's rated outstanding. So the preliminary total that we needed was 8,500, but we still only have $5,000. So we only have 59% of that preliminary number we calculated. So an above satisfactory increase would receive a 0.59% increase. We don't have anybody at above satisfactory, but we multiply the above satisfactory 0.59 times 1.7. So all the outstanding evaluations are receiving a 1% increase. We're maintaining that 1.7 to 1 ratio here. And this sort of shows how the cost of the proposal is evaluation neutral. Of course, people have different salaries and evaluations. So this example shows how these calculations would work with a mix of above satisfactory, satisfactory, outstanding. And I've changed the salaries in pairings here. This calculation, we would need $6,345 as a preliminary calculation. We still only have $5,000. So you see how it breaks out for individuals here. And that 1.34 for outstanding to 0.79 maintains that 1.7 to 1 ratio. This last example takes those same 10 employees paired up. We alternate above satisfactory and outstanding for each pairing. And this will show you sort of what the impact of salary and evaluation does. So you look at person B with an outstanding evaluation and a salary of 45,000, they're gonna get a merit increase of $515. Person I is making $20,000 more, but they received an above satisfactory evaluation. So they're getting a salary increase of $437. So you can see what the difference in terms of a calculation of their salary based on their evaluation, that the both factors make a difference in what the awards are. Here's back to the full proposal language. And now ready for questions. If you got questions about the mechanics I explained or about the rationale on any of the other screens.
I have just a couple of questions.
Sure.
So in your proposal, you're saying this is going to apply to librarians and I think the CDL people?
Those were the two I knew of that had been left out. I don't know if there's other units as well.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just looking at, we've got, in your bargaining, you've got things like curator, staff physicist, you know, some of these are like, they're the only people, I don't know that we have more than one curator, but I'm just, you know, you have a lot of people in this, in your unit that aren't eligible for TIPS, readers, or SOTL, so I'm wondering how that's going to work for them. Physicians, psychiatrist, you know, that's going to be an interesting challenge. And also, if I'm not mistaken, I think a CDL person won a RIA this year. So, because I know Jan told me that. And Our librarians, I know librarians aren't eligible for TIP because they don't generate SCHs, but
We've always been ineligible.
Huh?
We've always been ineligible for all these awards. That's why this has been an issue.
SOTL? You can't apply for a SOTL?
Nope. The way they're written, they were designed strictly for, okay. We've been excluded the entire time.
Okay.
The other thing, like, let's say we were eligible for TIPS, for example. Mm-hmm. Well, I do teaching, but a lot of my colleagues don't in the library.
Right. So
there would not be an opportunity, and that's their job definition, they don't do any teaching. And if we were competitive, if we were trying to do a, like, university-wide, we're still not going to be competitive. Even if you wrote us into them, we'd not be truly eligible.
Yeah.
What else?
I understand. You've done a good job of explaining why you want this and why you think it's important and how it would operate. So I don't have any specific questions in regard to that. Anybody else on my team?
Yeah, I've got at least one, Sherry. This is Chuck Riley, Rich. If I understood correctly, you said that if this thing were to be implemented, that you would want it to run in parallel with TIPRE and SOTL. So if for some reason there was a year where there were no TIPRE and SOTLs, then this wouldn't be in effect either?
That's correct. Yeah, we're not trying to establish something that's independent, completely independent of that. It's just if that's happening, then this should happen as well. If it's the only thing that's happening, this still happens with the TIPRE and SOTL.
Okay. Okay.
And I thought I remembered the last time one of the recent times we did Article 23, there was a lot of emphasis that had been placed on making sure that all members of the bargaining unit were eligible for these awards. And I'm not as adept as I would like to be with a single screen here to look at the CBA and stay in touch with everything that's going on in the meeting. But I think we would want to look very carefully at the language, because I remember one of the former chief negotiators was very adamant that all members of the bargaining unit should be eligible for as many awards as possible.
We identified it back in our first local bargaining in 2003-2005 as an issue, but we were, in the interest of reaching an agreement, we didn't solve it then. It's been raised a couple of times since then. I think the last time campus-wide there was a look at it was in depth was 2013, and we still didn't reach any solution for it. There's a lot of complexities as to why it's never worked out. We've got 42 librarians. It fluctuates between like 39 and 47, but it's a pretty large unit of people that have been completely left out. And I'm a librarian, so I've been focusing on that, but I didn't, as a concept, didn't want to ignore other large groups like instructional designers as units being made ineligible. I wasn't aware of the, we were saying to AREA for somebody, I'm not sure how they were eligible, because we've been always been told adamantly we're not eligible to apply for these awards. And I don't see any way we'd be competitive to really have an opportunity.
Actually, it was interesting. I mean, because Janice said that we did expand the language in this last go around. So that did open it up to more people. Now TIPS, no, because you have to generate SCHs. So if you're not, and I know a lot of librarians do teach some, but, and I know some of them teach like an adjunct capacity, they teach in other classes, but I don't know how that worked, but I know that that person did get AREA. But okay. Well, I have presented this concept to the provost and to the provost, and have not received specific feedback from him yet on that. He's had a lot going on, as you can imagine.
Yes.
I don't know if this is the time. I guess I'll just go ahead and say this now because I am not going to, I'm not authorized to put anything on the table right now, whether we thought it was the greatest idea in the world, if it has a dollar's worth of money going to anybody. I don't know if you saw the last Board of Trustees meeting, but we had several trustees that were vociferously arguing that we should not even implement tenure recommendations this year until we knew what our financial situation was, because of the long-term financial commitment that requires. And fortunately, I believe that was not accepted, and they did go ahead and approve the 10-year recommendations of the provost and the president. But that gives you some idea of the level of, I don't want to say hostility, because it's not that they don't want, but anxiety, I think, on the part of the board about what's going to happen with financially. We just don't know. And so, you know, right now, if I put something on the table, it would be the status quo, because I'm just in a position where I can't, you know, they would have my head on a platter if I put anything on the table that had money in it.
And sure, I fully understand that. I was here to explain the concept. I understood this was an information session.
Yes.
The bargain is for later activity to take place, but I want to make sure the rationale and the mechanics were clear. I understand there's nothing happening today on this, and maybe not anytime soon, but want to make sure that the proposal was understood.
It is, and as I said, I have presented it to the provost for his consideration, but then he presents it to the president once he's weighed in on it. But I just wanted to make that clear because, I don't want people to be disappointed because we're meeting and we're talking about these things. And, you know, we're trying to be responsive, at least in concept, that we think something is good or bad. But I don't want people to think that we're going to be able to really put anything on the table right now that has money in it. And I'm sorry about that, but I'm sorry about it for me too. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate the, your thoughtfulness in putting this presentation together. And you're right. I do remember that. as the song says, I remember it well, those early bargaining days.
Yeah. I don't know if when the initial 1.7-1 ratio was proposed by the BOT team, I'm not sure if you were on the team at that point, but you probably joined it as, I know you were there when we finished up the negotiation. Yeah. The initial, that ratio was initially proposed by the BOT team. So there's nothing new here in terms of how we do this. It's just,
no, I know.
There's a way of applying that.
Yeah, you know, I recognize that. Well, thank you, Rich. I appreciate it.
Okay, I'll stop sharing my screen. And y'all have it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, let me go back to the agenda. I have to keep. Okay. So I did want to address, we did want to address your proposal about the Excellence Awards. And I think Chuck has an idea that, if you want to call it a counter proposal, and I'll let him kind of explain it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Sherry. Last time when we got together, you had suggested that maybe there could be something done with the University Excellence in Research Award. And that's something that we wanted to take a pretty careful look at. And since Sherry's always mentioned the unspeakable, you know, we don't know how much money we're going to have. And anything that involves additional awards is somewhat scary to us. So we've been tossing around, and I think to call this as a proposal is probably too strong a word. But it's a concept that we're tossing around, and wanted to just at least mention it to you. We would like to be able to celebrate the accomplishments of faculty all across campus. There's no question about that. I think that's something we can agree on pretty easily. So the idea of partitioning the faculty or the disciplines or the colleges or something like that and saying there's going to be a university level award for this group and another one for this group is an interesting concept. It's challenging to figure out how to do it under the conditions that we're facing now and may face in the future. So we've been kind of tossing around an idea that might involve no additional awards. So the same cost to the university, the same investment in our faculty by the university. And again, this is not a proposal, it's a thought. So I'm thinking out loud and allowing you to hear me think out loud. I was recalling what I've seen done with the USPS Employees of the Month and their Employee of the Year competition. What they would typically do, I think it's April through March, they have a USPS Employee of the Month. And then at the end of March, an Employee of the Year over the last 12 months is selected. And that person was typically recognized at Founders Day. So I was wondering, well, could we do something kind of like that with, I don't want to call it necessarily research, I want to call it scholarship and creative works or something, because we have a variety of folks that do different kinds of things. So building on the thoughtful idea that you had shared with us last time, that we might have four groups of disciplines that might be associated with colleges, I kind of said, well, what if we took the colleges and partitioned them into four groups? And I couldn't do it exactly how you had proposed because it was very difficult, because I didn't see the word engineering anyplace in there. So I was struggling with that one. So I just created an example with groups. Didn't pay much attention to how many faculty there are in each group, but was just trying to figure out what might make sense to combine, with the understanding that with faculty doing interdisciplinary research these days, it's pretty hard to get your arms around what a group of colleges or disciplines looks like. But anyhow, I thought of the possibility of taking all the colleges and partitioning them into four groups. And I'm not nearly as creative as you were with your proposal. I didn't call them physical sciences and social science. I called them A, B, C, and D. That's as far as I could get. And then, so well, what if we did this kind of like this USPS award? And every year, there's a college level person who gets the Excellence in Scholarship and Creative Activities Award. But we wouldn't call it research anymore, because we do more than research. And that's my idea. No one has bought into that yet. That's why this is not yet a proposal, but it is a thought. So at Founders Day, if we were to do this, it would look the same, that there'd be a representative from each college that would get a college level award, and they would be recognized. What would be different is every 4 years, one of the four groups would get the University Excellence in Scholarship and Creative Activities Award. It would be that college's or that group's representatives that just got their college level awards, plus the people that won the college level awards in those colleges over the last 3 years. So they're, when they're recognized for a university level award, they're competing against people in similar, related, or at least grouped together disciplines. So for example, in the way that I had sketched this out on the back of an envelope, engineering and computer science was in group D. So they would participate in the university level award in the fourth year of the program. There'd be representatives from engineering, computer science, and other disciplines. I think I had included the College of Science in there as an example. The people that had won the university level awards, or the college level awards from the previous 3 years, plus the ones winning the current year, would be compared by a university committee, and that year the university committee wouldn't consider anybody from groups A, B, and C. They'd only focus on group D for the annual university level award, and it would cover people who had become eligible for that over the previous 4 years. This way, once every 4 years, somebody from each one of the groups is recognized at the university level. And it's not the same thing as doing somebody from each group every year, which is tough for us financially. I also think it also dilutes the award a little bit, but if there's a single person who's recognized at the university level for the scholarly and creative things that they do, and it's really special for them, I think it just adds to the intrinsic value, not the monetary value, but the intrinsic value of that award. So that's kind of an outline of what we've talked a little bit about. Again, no one's bought into it. It's kind of us thinking out loud, and interested in any reaction you have, any questions that you have, any suggestions that you have that might help us do a better job of thinking through this and making it work. What we know is with all these awards programs, faculty excellence has a ton of work that they have to do with these files. And in some ways, I think the excellence awards are actually harder to oversee than some of the other things that they do, because the teaching awards have a committee that meets in undergraduate studies, at least for the undergraduate level. The graduate level, it's a committee in the College of Graduate Studies. The Office of Research takes care of the Excellence in Research Awards. I think the Faculty Senate does the Professional Service Awards. They're going all over the place, and they got to keep track of this. So now that I've spent a little time over in Milliken Hall, and when I used to work there until a couple months ago, and I'd be around these people in faculty excellence, I see all the work that they do with these awards, and it's a big deal. So we want to do this in a good way that makes sense for the faculty, makes sense for faculty excellence. We don't want to create something that we can't manage. So again, just a thought. I'll shut up for a while and let anybody who has questions ask.
I'll allow first anyone from my team. Any of you have any questions regarding this right now? All right, because it may be something we discuss. I know you said it's just a concept, an idea. We'll probably have to think about it a little bit more, and then we'll get back to you about how we can make it work. I did have another question regarding, how about the honorable mentions for second place winners, like those that get the second most votes? And that was going to cost nothing, just a certificate.
To be perfectly frank, I haven't given that a thought. And I don't know if anybody on our team has done a better job than I have.
We haven't really talked about it a lot, but
I talked to Jana Jasinski, and she wasn't particularly thrilled with it. She felt like getting the second place would cause a lot of strife rather than anything else.
Okay.
But I won't rule that out completely, put it that way. I'm still open to that as a possibility.
Okay. I'll go to my members and see they would like, because it was their suggestion as well to, about the honorable mention. Okay. Right, thank you. I really appreciate you sharing all your thoughts and concepts. I know, I mean, I am fully aware, also being a state representative, that not state representative, but you, through UFF, I realize that DeSantis has not signed anything and he's doing a little political dance right now. So I am aware, but I do appreciate that you continue to meet with us and discuss some of the language, particularly when some of the language isn't necessarily going to cost the university something, but it is going to mean a lot to certain people, such as considering honorable mentions or, and thank you, Chuck, very much for writing on a piece of napkin and really thinking about this, about doing this every 4 years. If you have any written language, even if it is on the back of a paper or something, handwritten, I'd love to see it so I can get like, so when I go over it with my team or some of my members, to really understand like the concept of what you were doing. And then as far as like group A, B, C, and D, did you write down like what each group was in, like group A? Because I know you said engineering and computer sciences in group D, but I wanted to know like how many other groups were in the group, how many other departments were in these groups?
Well, in the example that I had, I ended up with three in group D that would probably be considered STEM, engineering, computer science, optics and photonics, and sciences. And then I really struggled with some of the other ones. That was the easiest group for me to put together. But I thought, you know, business and Rosen might go together. That they Rosen came out of the College of Business at one point. There are others that are related to health, CHIPS and nursing and so on. And then everything else that was left over was Group A.
Okay.
But, you know, I have not... I don't know whether these groups make sense, and even if we were at the point where this concept was officially being proposed, I'm sure we would have some conversations about those groupings.
Okay, so where your groupings were based on, do we have 13 colleges or 12 colleges
currently? I actually have 14 because I had heard through the grapevine that Rich Gauss was going to be here today, so I included the library.
Okay, good. Okay, so 14 colleges. Okay.
Well, there's 13 colleges, but I just, in my little thing on the envelope, there was enough room for a 14th symbol, so I put it down.
Okay. Okay, all right, well, thank you. I don't want to stray too much far away from like the agenda or anything, but I wondered if Sherry or Charlie or Chuck, if you had any information regarding like the HEROES Act and how we're going to distribute the funds. I know that half was meant for the students, but the other half was, at least to my knowledge from my last meeting, was that it was up to the discretion of the university, each of the universities.
You mean the CARES Act, Giovanna?
Yeah, the CARES Act, a distribution. Okay. I know we got like $51 million. Half was intended for the students, and then the other half was supposed to be for the discretion of each university. So each university was supposed to decide how to spend it. I don't know if you guys had any ideas to what UCF has decided.
I don't know that there's been a final decision on that. I heard conversation that some of that would be used to reimburse housing, because we had to, and I back me up on this, Sarah and Chuck, if I'm getting this wrong, but I think we had to, or we chose to, reimburse students for the tuition that they, when we made them move off campus, and which was a chunk of money that we didn't really have at the time. And I think that some of the CARES money is being used to kind of make housing whole, But that's just conversation that I've heard. I don't know if they've made a final decision or if they've actually given them any money yet. So anybody else know?
wasn't tuition per se, but room and board. We reimbursed.
I mean, room and board. I didn't need tuition. That was silly.
Yeah, that was a several million dollars hole. But I think that they were hoping to partially or fully reimburse through the use of CARES Act money. But I don't know if that final decision has been made, like Sherry says, or how they're planning to spend the balance. I know there's a lot of competing claims on the money from all sorts of directions, but I'm not up to date on that. So we can try and find out more.
Yeah, I'll try to find out more for you.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Oh, you know, this is when I miss being on campus, because in a normal time, I'd just, you know, on a break or a caucus, I'd just walk in Naomi's office and say, do you know what they're doing with the rest of that CARES Act money? But I don't have the ability to do that now.
Yeah. I guess I didn't put that on the agenda, but I was also wondering also about the fall dates. Do you know if those will be on campus or we'll continue doing Zoom?
Well, I mean, I'll be back on campus in the fall. I mean, we will to some, you know, I think we may have to wait to, I think we would be better off to schedule them at Zoom now, and then if we need, and maybe switch them to, because my understanding currently is that, and you know, this changes depending on what goes on with the virus from week to week, but that even through a good chunk of, if not all of the fall, they're only going to open, only going to let people have 50% capacity in their build, in their offices. Now we're at 30. So, you know, it'll be a question of, can we get, you know, I know, can we physically do it? Because I don't, you know, we'll have to really think hard about that one.
Yeah, because I mean, I see all the advantages of being able to do this all face to face as opposed.
Yeah, I mean, I much prefer to do it that way. I think we all do, but I just don't know what the staffing levels are going to permit us to do.
And then I heard, I don't know if it was Perk or somebody, one of those like basically talking about, like, these are supposed to be very public forums and stuff when we already do bargaining sessions. So there was some discussion about like, is Zoom public enough? So like, if at one thing we wanted to have like 100 people, can we actually have 100 people?
We could switch to something like WebEx, I guess, or Skype, because I mean, I know that they're doing, you can do very large numbers of people on those things. Mm-hmm. You know, like the campus forums that we've had, I've been to two of them now. The one yesterday on reopening, I mean, you know, you can get a lot of people on those.
Okay. Nina, you had a question? You're muted, Nina.
I just have a comment about like Skype or, for example, Team. I think that Zoom is the best. It has a superior performance, and we just, in Faculty Senate, we just could not operate with Microsoft Team. It just did not work. We returned back to Zoom. But also there is a license for Zoom which allow to have like 500 people, and so maybe if necessary. It's just a technical comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I had forgotten that, Nina, that we do have that, we have a license that allows us to have very large meetings. Yeah, I mean, I prefer Zoom. It's just easier to operate in, but well, I guess we'll just have to see. I mean, we can't get 500 people in a normal bargaining session, even if it's face-to-face.
Yeah. So yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, because we'd have to have a lot of, everyone would have to wear masks or something. Yeah, you're absolutely right. just because I've had more interest, like people asking me when the sessions are. And as you can see today, we have a few more people than usual. Yeah, because it's, especially as we, like you said, like there's a little bit of anxiety owed to lots of very fast changes and pandemics. Okay. Okay, so did you think about 23.7? So this is back on the agenda, the contract language for ADIs.
We were supposed to do something with that. I thought we talked about something, but I didn't. I apologize for that.
So the ADI, it was just making it clear. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll wait till your bell.
Oh, my mute.
So for the ADI, the concern was that some of our members felt that there was a lot of favoritism, and also there was some confusion, because remember when when he was provost or when he became president, Whitaker had passed a lot of equity raises, but people mm-hmm. thought they had received ADIs. So there was a lot of confusion as to, is something an ADI, is it something like equity, is something merit? And so we just wanted to provide, the other thing too that I think a lot of people didn't know, and Chuck clarified, is this is college level money. So the college has to have money in order to provide an ADI, right? If I'm correct, Chuck, you can correct me.
That's my understanding, yes. That's exactly what I said. And that's been my understanding all along, that the deans have to be able to support these.
Okay. So that was basically what it was. It's clarification of language.
And Giovanna, I think on the equity awards or the equity salary increases that Dale Whitaker wanted to implement, they were for equity, but I believe the only way it could work in our systems mm-hmm. was if they were called ADIs.
Got it.
So it wasn't really an ADI.
In the sense that we normally think of them.
But okay. It was a workaround.
It was a workaround. Okay. So I think because
Dale Whitaker wanted to make sure that people got that money, and this, he made it happen.
Okay. Yeah, because I think that's what caused some of the confusion, but it caused some people to think like that's how it works, the ADI system. So I just wanted to have language. I think it's in there that is very clear about that, and also where the money comes from. So it has to be from your college.
Okay. Can I say something?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, that's very important what Chuck is saying, because in the future, if you compare ADIs versus merit raise or whatever, you may see inflated ADIs due to the approach that Dale Whitaker was taking to give this money to some faculty, right? So it's good to keep that in mind, that numbers in ADIs are not necessarily only ADIs, could be due to this approach. You see what I mean, Chuck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there can occasionally be some unique circumstances. I think when those equity raises were implemented, that was a unique circumstance with a lot of instances of that same unique circumstance at once.
Yeah, you know, we're so limited in the way that we can spend our money. I mean, that seems silly, but, you know, we have so many restraints on it can only come from this bucket, or this can only come from this bucket. And, you know, that's what got us in trouble with Colburn Hall. You know, the state colleges do not have those same restrictions. If Valencia had done that, it would have been fine. But for some reason, the legislature just feels like it wants to really control how state university systems spend their money. And so they put all these requirements on us. And sometimes you have to get creative and try to figure out how to work with that, work within the system legally. And it's challenging.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So that was what that
okay.
was. So for the ADIs, and that's why I also put, like, does it consider gender and racial disparity? So that's why I don't know if you remember my original proposal.
Yeah.
I added, yeah, so that's why it was in there. But yes, if we could just have something like that, just saying that the money comes from the college, even that, some line like that would really help, I think, a lot of our members understand a little bit better about what ADIs and where the money comes from.
Okay.
Yeah, and I understand the bucket. I've seen the budget thing. I've been to one of the sat in with like the color codes and the buckets, and yeah, it does get very confusing very fast.
Well, and Giovanna, I understand why you'd like to have language like that in there. We're at a point in our history mm-hmm. where things could change. The university's working on a new budget model. 2 years from now, we could have a new provost who wants to do budgeting differently again. And if we put something in here that says that the money has to come from the college, that means a provost that comes in and has some idea about how he or she wants to distribute equity raises, let's say, they can't do it.
Okay.
So
I see what you mean.
I think there's some things that are very important for us to talk about. And we want to make every effort to be as clear and as transparent with you as we can. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we don't necessarily want to put anything into the contract that ties everybody's hands so the faculty don't get these raises because we've changed the way we do budgeting. And now, well, it says it has to come from the college. The provost says, I want to do it. Well, I can't. Sorry.
I see. Yeah, you don't want to take the power from the provost. Yeah, right. I understand. Yeah.
But that's, both Eloy and myself have been working at the college levels, and we know how these things happen. And the deans, by and large, with the exception of the equity raises that Dale Whitaker implemented, the deans have to come up with that money. It isn't that the provost gives that college a larger allocation. The deans have to figure out some way they're going to juggle something to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And because it says discretion, some deans may say, too risky. I'm just choosing not to do that. And that's okay.
Okay. All right. Does anyone on my team have any other questions about ADI?
And this is why we like to have people who are in the colleges on our team, because they understand how these things work better than I do.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. So we'll continue discussing all of this. The next thing. Oh, was administrative salary stipends. And what I had talked about, my notes here were, we were going to set up a meeting to discuss. So
yeah, that's what I was thinking when I saw this. I was like, I thought they were going to meet with us to talk about this.
Yeah, I know. With everything going on, every day something's going on. So so informal discussion. Yeah, so we were going to have an informal discussion about administrative salary stipends.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So could we make that now? Could we start looking at dates of when we could do that?
Yeah, email me. We get off of this to bargaining meeting, but email me. It's fine.
Okay. All right. And basically the things here that we, you know, to make sense of the stipends and all the different, yeah, because I just in collecting just among our members, just a few of them, we only had like, there was 20 of us and we all had 20 different ways of how we got I guess some sort of compensation for the work we did. So yeah, so I just wanted to understand, our team wanted to understand a little bit more about administrative salary stipends. Okay.
One of the things that you will have to understand, I think, is that sometimes it doesn't get to central administration, that there are things that happen within the college that we don't see, but that's, I'm very interested in helping you understand a little bit better. No problem.
Okay. So we have that. So next on the agenda was, and I had already mentioned this in the email as well, about discussion of potential dates and topics for our second MOU for impact bargaining.
Okay, so this is our MOU that we did on COVID. We were closing that out until the fall, right? So you're wanting to start, or August or something like that.
So wanted to. Oh, so
I don't have it in front of me. The language of the one we've already done.
So the first MOU. Go ahead.
You want to start a new session of impact bargaining around going back to campus? Is that what? Because I'm not clear what it is we're getting ready to impact bargain over.
Okay, so the first impact bargaining MOU that we signed was regarding everything through summer. And so if the in the language of the MOU, it said that if this was going to continue, this being that we would then return to bargaining again for fall or 2020, 2021.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, oh, and you said you people are, okay. Well, we'll start looking for dates.
Okay. And there's two things this time, because it's just from our, several of our members have also talked about having something on campus, and I did write something about like we can do this together regarding systemic racism and how it affects them and how it impacts their life, especially with, I think a lot of, with Nagy, of course, most of us already know, with his tweets and everything. For a lot of our members, they said this isn't, a lot of people already knew about Nagy for a very long time. It's just that Nagy's not like pushing it all in our faces in the, you know, in the face of all these anti-violence, these protests against police violence against race and blacks. So our members and our team included had some suggestions and stuff. So that would be included in the MOU. So we're starting to draft it right now. So for instance, I put one example there. So this is something that our administration and UFF could do together, including hosting a Zoom forum, possibly also a year-long discussion on issues of race, gender, and inclusion. And I've had this conversation with other administrators as well. Just sometimes, you know, we have a very diverse faculty. We have very diverse everything in the campus. And perhaps it's a it is a cultural issue. One of the things, for instance, is even our own faculty don't really understand what systemic racism is. Some of our own faculty don't think it's insulting to say very hurtful things to non-white members of their department. And so I think, and I'm being, you know, I'm being optimistic that it's just ignorance. It's not that they're actually trying to be mean. So I think it's something that we have to have open discussions about. And you probably heard also about the upcoming, the protest that students want to do and they want to bring it to campus. Because I think our students are also very aware of what systemic racism is and they want to protest against that on our campus. But also our own faculty, I think, are impacted by all of this. And even though I've seen a lot of discussion, I read all the administrative emails, they're all about, you know, of course, you know, we're here for our students, we want to help our students, but UFF, our team, we're also interested in how this impacts our faculty. So that's why we wanted to make sure and include that in the second MOU. And in some ways, they're both related. I mean, COVID, for instance, just revealed a lot of the inequities, inequalities, and a lot of cultural problems that we have in the United States, particularly personally, I would say also everywhere in the United States, not just the Southern United States.
Yeah, it has definitely, COVID has definitely impacted communities of color disproportionately. Those communities have borne a much heavier burden from it.
Giovanna, I want to see if I understand this right, that you'd like to see another MOU that covers both COVID-19 and systemic racism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the impact from that, yes.
I may have some people on my team that don't like this, but is there any thought to maybe two MOUs?
Two MOUs?
And I mean, I understand there's some overlap there for reasons that have already been mentioned.
So what you're saying is treat them separately.
Yes. Okay. Where there may be some cross references, but just as we did the first COVID-19 MOU to take us through the summer, I would think there would be a short duration for the next COVID-19 MOU. But frankly, I won't admit that I won't claim that I understand the full extent of systemic racism on our campus or anyplace else. And I don't know that there's solutions that we're going to come to in the same finite time frame. That's been building up for a long time. that may take a while to deal with, where hopefully this virus is something that we can get under control. So that's one thought that I have, is that I don't know that we will be addressing both of those topics for the same time frame into the future.
Or in the same MOU, you mean?
Yeah, or this, and you know, maybe Sherry or Sarah, Charlie will disagree. Eloy may too.
No,
we can do it in one session, but I think there could be two documents, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay. Are there any, Nina has a comment, and I was about to ask, anyone from my team have any comments or suggestions? Nina?
Yeah, I have a very minor comment based on what I understand, probably I understand nothing about COVID, but I have a feeling that it will be with us for some time. So I think that it would be rather safe to consider that time frame would be probably identical, that it has to be addressed. And my guess would be that it should be both fall and spring semester altogether covered, because for both issues, it's very, very important to have continuous coverage. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina. And Chuck, actually, I did have a question about that, because I'm following the news and stuff, and the statistics and everything, it just looks like COVID is going to continue through spring 2021. Would you prefer, I guess, Sherry, the question for Sherry and Chuck, would you prefer for the MOU for COVID to just be through fall 2020, or could we discuss fall 2020 and spring 2021?
I would prefer it to be just for the fall, because we don't really know at this point what the spring is going to look like. It could be very different. I mean, I don't think we're going to have beaten this thing down by Christmas. I mean, but things could either get much worse, hopefully not, but, you know, if some predictions are that we're going to have a really bad second wave in the fall of this year, if that happens, the kind of bargaining kind of impact that would have on spring would be very different than if we don't. And if we reopen and things go well and go smoothly and we don't have a spike in cases on campus and people feel safer about coming back, we might open up more in the spring. That's the optimistic best case scenario. So there's just so much unknown with this virus, and quite honestly, we don't know what the state's going to require. I mean, you know, we're reopening. I think we probably would have wanted to reopen anyway, because we have a lot of student demand, and it's difficult doing everything online. But even if we didn't want to reopen in the fall, the BOG is telling the state universities, you will be open in the fall. So, you know, some of the unknown, you know, then the BOG could say in the spring, this thing is, roaring back, we're going to shut you down again. Or they could say, you know, it's gone swimmingly, let's open up even more. So we just don't have enough information, not enough in our control, I think, that I would want to bargain for two semesters at this point.
Okay. All right. Very good. So I don't know if you wanted, this is what I did. The pandemic form on our agenda, the members' concerns. So I had three or four, mostly women, female faculty concerned about the pandemic form, not because of the information they wanted. They thought they were going to open up a survey, kind of a non-identified survey. Instead, they opened up a PDF that actually requested their name and their ID and stuff and everything. So they felt like they would be targeted. And these were people who do have pre-existing conditions, and they, some of them don't want to really share that information because they feel, and I guess this discussion has happened before, so some of them feel like a culture of fear. So if they were, they, if they were to expose this information, that they would somehow, someone would use it against them in some way. So they were a little nervous about that. So they were not against filling out a survey. They just didn't want it to have identifiable information in it. And then they, of course, they cited to me the Bill of Rights and the HIPAA, which I'm very aware of. So we wondered if instead of a form where you have to identify yourself, if the administration would be open to just providing like sort of survey. I'm assuming you just wanted the information, not really the exact person, but I don't know.
I can't speak to that because I didn't get it, I don't think.
This is the one that you included in your email this morning?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't remember getting it myself, so I don't know who got it or why they sent it out exactly. Sarah may have more insight into that than I would, but because she works more with HR.
Sarah had to drop off for another call.
Oh, that's right. She's on another Title IX call.
You guys are covering, so we might have to table that.
But yeah.
Yovana, can you think you can rephrase it? I thought I had it for a second. Can you rephrase the question a little bit again? I'm sorry to make you repeat yourself, but I thought I had an answer, and then I lost confidence.
Oh, okay. So here's the question again. Would the administration, assuming that you just want the information about who has childcare or who has a pre-existing condition, would the administration be okay with sending it out in more anonymous survey form rather than a form that requires you to identify yourself?
Okay, I see. I think we'd have to get in touch with the people that are conducting that issue. So we'll look into that.
I don't even know who it was that sent it out. But
even when things are anonymous, you have people who are afraid that we can trace it back to your computer. There's always someone who's not doesn't feel secure enough.
Well, I think there's two things that I noticed about that form that I'll mention. One, it was very clear that no one had to identify any personal information but their name and UCF ID. So it just said that here are three reasons why you might request an accommodation to work at home. You don't have to indicate which one, just have to say whether any one of the three applies to you. So it wouldn't necessarily be a personal health issue, could be any reason. But I think it's very important with these surveys that the university gets a good count. And in order to make sure we get a good count, we have to make sure that nobody said, oh, I can't remember whether I filled this out, and they send it in again. This way it can be verified we've heard from each person once and only once. So I actually thought that a lot of careful thought had gone into the way this was done. Yes, I've got to identify myself that I responded, but I don't have to tell you why.
No, I understand. It's just that I also did not feel comfortable. Like, I would say personally also, I didn't feel comfortable putting my name or anything, but I completely understand data collection. I totally understand that you need to know, UCF needs to know this information. I just wondered also if it could be done in a non-identifiable way. And there is a way to do a survey where it's connected to your email, and it just shows that person answered. It doesn't show that this data is connected to this person. And, you know, I've done it in survey data. I know other people have done it as well.
All right, we'll check on that.
Okay.
We'll ask.
Okay, so that brings us so a couple of things. So just any final remarks? And also, did you want to start scheduling right now for the COVID, or is that something I have to email you, Charlie?
It would be great if you'd start looking at the dates, and Briannis is really taking care of scheduling things for us too. But if I'm copy, then I know that I can see it back and forth between you and Briannis, and I know everything is well in the world.
Okay.
So just for our team, we cannot go any closer than like 2.5 weeks. Just can't get all the people that we need to talk to a lot of the times. And with money, maybe Sherry can talk to you a little bit about when we might be able to get some numbers, but right now we're completely in the dark about money.
Yeah, I've sort of had that discussion already at the beginning, so.
I feel like it can't be said enough times.
Especially right now, I mean, with all of the open forums that have been happening, you cannot even imagine the amount of work it takes to put those things on. And when you've got the provost and the president involved in all of them, getting to them is really difficult.
Okay. No, I know that, I guess DeSantis, he has to sign, I think he's, the Constitution says there, or something says, some Florida law says that it has to be June 30th. He has to sign or else, I'm not sure what the or else. So I know it's by June 30th. So I'm fully aware of that. But let me see. As far as dates to start discussing the MOU, most of that is not going to be money. So most of it is trying to help our faculty, you know, trying to relieve some of the impact from both COVID. And then I think I'm amenable to doing two documents. And you'll see that both, you know, they're not money related. So it's something that we can start discussions on.
That's fine.
So regarding dates, so for the impact bargaining, Charlie, are you saying you can't do anything 2.5 weeks out?
Impact bargaining isn't money.
But
it's still, talking to our constituent, you know, Sherry has to be able to have a conversation with the provost, who I understand, as you can imagine, the time bubble for him to be able to think about these things deeply. And he likes to think about these things very deeply. It takes time. We're very lucky because he's a very thoughtful person.
Okay, this is so.
No, I think what Charlie was saying was that we can't meet, we have to have at least that amount of time in between sessions. So, like, it would be unproductive to meet every week on anything that I require my getting input from somebody higher up right now.
Okay. So our next bargaining section was actually, so let's just say bargaining, this is for money. That was scheduled, I have it on my scheduler as July 9th. So by then we should have some conversation.
We'll know something.
Know something from DeSantis. And if there's also, hopefully by then we'll also know if there's going to be a special session of some sort from the Florida legislature. Isn't it fun living in Florida?
It is, and it's even more fun in an election year, because I'm also hearing that they may decide just to punt on a whole lot of stuff until they can get through the election and then start coming around and doing all the unpopular things that they may have to do.
Yes. so we'll see. So far, I'll be optimistic. So if we were to start discussing the impact bargaining, would the week of June 22nd work for everyone? Or is that still too soon? That's 2 weeks.
Let me look. I think that's going to be, okay, so that week I am doing a virtual conference from 11 to 5, Monday, Tuesday, I'm that whole week.
Okay.
I'm not available from 11 to 5. So,
the next Monday, the 29th looks a little better, Giovanna, us. In fact, I think if you do the afternoon of the 30th, we've got a really good, for our team, a really good look.
Okay.
Sarah's probably not available on the 29th, but I see that she hasn't yet scheduled something on the 30th. So if you have an afternoon block, like the 1 to 3:30 again, I think that we can make that work.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, June 30th from 1 to 3:30, that's perfect. Okay. And then would you like me to send you, before that session, would you like me to send you the two documents? Because like what we did last time, Chuck, where you were able to have it in beforehand to think about it, it, you know, it helped.
Yeah, that would be nice.
We always appreciate getting that in advance if that's possible.
Okay. I also double checked with PERC and all the other stuff, and apparently that is, a lot of other schools do that. So it is perfectly legal to send it to before, as long as we discuss it at the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There's just one little like housekeeping thing regarding but I'll email you, Charlie, regarding the locks to our office.
Okay, yeah, I'm still chasing that down. There is a key request form, but because you're an outside entity as the UFF, I'm trying to figure it out. No one seems to be able to tell me who the building manager is for that building. So I am working on it already because I got your email this morning.
Okay.
All right, so I will continue to work on that until I figure it out. It may take me just a bit, but I understand. I don't know how much we're changing to swipes, and that wouldn't be a problem if we changed the lock to a swipe, would it?
Oh, no, that would not be a problem. And actually, that would be preferable. That'd be nice.
I completely understand that. I know that there's a cost associated with that, but I think that the university is slowly trying to move over to that. So I'm trying to keep all those things in mind, okay?
Okay.
Just give me a little time.
All right, thank you. Anyone on my team, do you have any other final comments? No, okay. All right. Okay then, yay. All right then, so I guess we'll conclude today's session. Thank you everybody thank you Chuck, thank you Sherry, Charlie, Aloy, and of course Brianna, and of course on my team as well, for yes. coming today and for being open to discussing all of these things. So I will follow up with a couple emails. I'll also create those two MOUs and have them ready before our June 30th. And hopefully by that time too, we'll have some sort of, some idea about our budget.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be nice. And until then, I guess I'll keep paying attention to COVID statistics and everything that's going on in the world.
I just want to say thank you to everyone as well. I'm sorry not to say hello. I had a couple of emergency calls about some recent news events, you can imagine. So
yes,
thanks for all the work that everybody's doing.
Okay, and just one last thing to my team. I'm going to send you a link for our quick caucus room debrief. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, guys.